For the rest of the show today, we want to talk about how this pandemic has changed your life and your relationships, and how you feel about those changes. We'll be taking your calls at 1-800-423-8255 in just a little bit. But we want to do a check-in first, because pandemic life is just going to keep going until enough of us are vaccinated and safe. And news about the likelihood of those two things just keeps coming at us. So we want to do a quick check-in on the variants and vaccines, including the latest news over the last 12 to 24 hours about yet-to-be U.S.-approved AstraZeneca's vaccine. So we have a guest joining us to do that, Dr. Davidson Hamer. He is a professor of infectious diseases and medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine, also a professor at Boston University School of Public Health. Dr. Hamer, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
So, Dr. Hamer, I want to start with this complicated picture. So yesterday, the Commonwealth enters stage four of reopening. And while overall numbers remain low and that reopening is happening, in the last week, the average case counts have risen and more Massachusetts towns have entered the red. Meanwhile, we're seeing other countries, France, Germany, Italy, re-enter lockdown. We heard news out of New Jersey today of a surge that's concerning there. Are we at risk right now of another surge here in the Commonwealth?
That's a difficult question to answer. I mean, I think we are not completely in a safe place yet. I think part of what's happening in at least in Massachusetts and potentially several other states in the U.S. is rapid spread of the B.1.1.7 variant, the UK, so-called UK variant. And that appears to be more transmissible. And actually, there are two studies from the UK suggesting that it's associated with a higher risk of severe disease and death. And that may be happening concurrent with our gradual ruling out of the vaccine. And, you know, hopefully the vaccine does cover this strain. It creates immunity that eliminates the strain. But we need to move faster with the vaccination before this catches up to us.
I don't mean to make light of this, but I am imagining in my mind one of those old carnival tabletop games with the horses on tracks that are running against each other, the little metal ones. And I feel like what I'm hearing you say is that the vaccination rate is running against the spread of the variants. Is that right?
I mean, that may be the case. Again, you know, without sequencing, you know, a large number of isolates from infected people, it's hard to know how widespread the different variants are. And there are other variants of concern. I mean, at least the preliminary data that has been generated in Massachusetts and also across the country suggests that B.1.1.7 has been spreading fairly widely. But there are other variants. There's the P1 from Brazil, and there's the South African strain, and there's a new strain from California. So there's a lot that requires monitoring. And, you know, if we have more systematic sequencing of positive samples being done, we'll have a better understanding of which of these strains are becoming predominant. But you're right, it is sort of a race to get the vaccine out before they spread too widely. And the other benefit, if we get a large proportion of people immunized, there's less transmission of virus, there's less virus present, and it has fewer opportunities to mutate. And that'll sort of even help eliminate the likelihood of new strains developing.
So what I take out of that is, yes, there's a bit of a race, but also there's a lot we still don't know, and it's still quite complex. And then I feel like we've got now some whiplash here. So AstraZeneca, not approved for emergency use here in the United States, being used in Europe. So to briefly recap for our listeners, earlier this month, due to concerns about blood clotting, some countries in Europe stopped deploying it. The EU then said, that's not appropriate. It is safe. And then yesterday, AstraZeneca reported promising results from its U.S. trial because, of course, it wants to be in the process of getting approved for emergency use here, authorized for emergency use. But then overnight, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases said that the data they presented yesterday may have been based on outdated and incomplete information. So lots going on there. What do you want people to take away from the moment about the AstraZeneca vaccine and where we are in this kind of unfolding saga?
The AstraZeneca vaccine story is a complicated one. I mean, I think they've made several missteps over the course of the last several months. I mean, the first one had to do with their design of the initial trial and the dosing schedules that they used in that. And then the second was the much more recent one with clotting, which is a complicated story that's very nuanced. I mean, they're probably the type of the normal levels of clotting are not above what you would expect to see in a population at any one point in time, but there's a very rare form of a cerebral thrombosis that's occurred that we don't know if it's clearly associated with the vaccine. It's just happened a few more times than one would anticipate, so it definitely merits further investigation, but it's very rare, and it may not necessarily be due to the vaccine. And now this issue with the release of data, which apparently the Data Safety Monitoring Board, which is a group that's put together an external to the trial to monitor for safety purposes, they were the ones that raised the red flag on this. And usually the DSMB or the Data Safety Monitoring Board works very closely with the company to sort out issues. And so this is a very unusual situation. And I think in the end, it's going to work out that, you know, that this will prove to be an effective vaccine for preventing symptomatic infection. And all the evidence suggests that it's very effective in preventing severe disease and hospitalization. And that's the most important component. But it really is unfortunate that there have been these challenges that have arisen.
Dr. Hamer, concerned then that the drama, despite the outcome that you just laid out that you're anticipating, that it's going to undermine public sense of safety, public confidence. I mean, we're already having lots of conversation about vaccine hesitancy here.
I mean, it may do that, but you know, the reality is that we are using the Moderna vaccine, the Pfizer and BioNTech vaccine, and now the Janssen, Johnson & Johnson vaccine. There have been no issues with those vaccines. You know, they cause some short-term side effects, and then people recover, and it looks like they induce, you know, very good protective immune response against both symptomatic infection and, most importantly, severe disease and hospitalization. So we have three, you know, effective, safe vaccines on the market in the U.S. already. You know, having a fourth would be great, but we need to sort through some of these questions that have arisen.
So in just a minute, we're going to open the phones, turn to a couple of other guests, and talk about how pandemic life has changed us and our relationships and what of that we want to keep and what of that we want to change. But we can't make a lot of changes until we're on the other side of this, whatever that is. And so I guess, are we winning or losing our battle to contain the virus and get on the other side of it?
I think overall we're winning, but there clearly have been challenges. I mean, if you look at Israel, which has done one of the, you know, best sort of jobs in the world in terms of scaling up vaccines to their population, you know, their rates of hospitalization and new cases have plummeted. And I think that, you know, as Biden's plan and the CDC all work together to increase availability of vaccine at the state level, states figure out how best to deliver it. People need to be willing to accept the vaccines. And again, you know, they are effective and the evidence thus far suggests they're safe. If we get a high level of coverage of the vaccines, you know, I think we will have very little disease being transmitted, and we can get closer to being back to normal.
All right. That is Dr. Davidson Hamer of both the Boston University School of Medicine and the Boston University School of Public Health. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. All right. Take care.
So we will open the phones now. We want to spend the rest of the hour talking with you about how the pandemic has shaped the way you live, your relationships, and how you feel about those changes. What do you want to keep from your COVID-19 adjustments? What do you want to lose from those adjustments? And have you grown closer to the people in your life, further apart? Maybe you've been dating. How has that been? Have certain life events happened for you sooner than they normally would? Maybe moving in together, planning a family, trying to buy a house. And what about personality and personally? Are there habits, traits you've picked up that you want to keep or let go of? New hobby, something that gets you excited now that didn't before. We want to hear about all of it. 800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK, or you can send us a tweet. We have two really fun guests to join us for this. Meredith Goldstein runs the Boston Globe's Love Letters advice column and podcast, and comedian Bethany Van Delf also hosts the 10 News and Artisan Comedy and is a co-host of Parental Logic on Nova/PBS. Bethany, Meredith, welcome. Glad to have you.
Hello. Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Hey, great to have you both. So, Bethany, what is one thing that has changed in your pandemic life, and is it a keeper or one that you want to shed?
Oh, God. Everything has changed. I would like to shed co-parenting 24/7. Yeah, I'd like
say
to get
a little
rid of
more
that.
About that. Yeah. Well, so, I mean, now the co-parenting or the 24/7?
The 24/7. Okay. So, my husband and I, we're fine. We're together. We're living, married with our kids. And in the before times, he worked, you know, a kind of office hours, like 9 to 5-ish. And he got home by 6 and then would kind of, you know, tap out and I'd leave to go do shows in the evening. And on the weekends, we were like the best together parents in the whole world. This 24/7 of parenting at the same time, like, you know, he'll come down in the morning. I got the kids all set up for remote learning. He comes down for his coffee and then he starts barking out orders to the kids. And I'm like, we got this. We're okay. We're all right. Give hugs and kisses, grab your coffee, go back upstairs to the bedroom office, and we got this.
So first, Bethany, I want to say my husband and I joke that when things are going well together, we make one really good parent. When it's really going right, never two, just one together. Meredith, I noticed that the first thing Bethany went to had something to do with a relationship. And I know that's something that you've been thinking about during this pandemic. So maybe you just want to pick it up from there.
Well, first of all, this is a delight because I'm a big fan of Bethany. So this is such a delight to be here. But I will say that as an advice columnist, what a year. I mean, the problem's completely changed. Every problem about relationships has a COVID lens. And I would just say that, you know, in the very beginning of the pandemic, people would call me because I live alone and they would say, are you okay? But you're alone. And I would sort of say, well, I've got my TV and my snacks, and I felt, you know, very grateful. But I think, you know, couples who had a routine, you know, a lot of couples would say, we're not good at this. This is hard. We're not good at this. And I would say, you're not supposed to be good at this. Who's supposed to be good at this? So I think there's going to be a lot of healing that has to do just about realizing the year that couples went through. You know, I recently interviewed a chaplain who likened it to telling a bunch of athletes to switch positions, you know, that people are doing jobs they never did. And that, you know, rang very true to me. And I think, you know, on the flip side of it, I'm also seeing so many couples who started dating during this time. And what a fascinating study, because they have had all of this time to appreciate each other, to build a foundation, to bubble together, to be in a pod together. And yet they have never been at a party together. Maybe they've never been stuck in traffic together. So for them, entering the world in the after times, which, you know, hopefully we're getting to, is going to be a shock in a very different way.
So I'm going to go to the phones here. And again, listeners, and we invite you into this conversation. What has changed for you in your personal practices, your relationships, who you live with, how you live together? Bring it all. 800-423-8255 is the number to call. Let's turn to Catherine in Marlboro. Catherine, go ahead.
Hi, my husband and I have created a way that people can sing together when nobody's allowed to sing together indoors. We do something called the driveway choir that literally started in our driveway. And I feel like we have met so many people in the choral world. We've worked with a lot of different choral directors and singers. We've had like 700 people come to different events that we've done. And I feel like we're working together in a way that we never were able to before with our different careers. So that's been really
fun. How does it actually work, Catherine? So what am I picturing in your driveway? How does this work?
Well, we hand everyone a wireless microphone and we tell them an FM radio frequency that's not used that that everybody tunes to so that they can hear the mix of the sounds of all of the singers who are in their little bubble. And so we have, you know, 25 or 30 people all singing in their own cars, but we mix them on a mixer and it sounds like a chorus. We've even
Catherine,
gone as far as to have like 100 people sing the Messiah in December. So that was fun.
I'm so glad you called. I know, right, Catherine? Awesome. Thank you for calling and telling us about that. So Bethany, do you have top that, Bethany? Do you have anything as good as that you've started doing? And if not, what is something that you've started doing that you kind of like and might even want to keep doing once we finally get to some other side of new normal?
I feel like I'm still in the trauma. Like, it's too soon to be able to answer that question. No, I love that idea of the coral. I want to stop researching places to donate outgrown kids' clothes. And I would like to, so I just want to change this when the pandemic's over. I want to be a little bit more free about my donating. Like, I want to be able to put some board books and some baby clothes and some coats in the same bag and feel confident dropping it off at one place. So I think this is more like a growth thing. I hope that I grow into this new role post-pandemic in the after times.
When you say feel confident, what do you mean by that? Feel confident dropping off
right now
in one place.
Well, right now I research the best place for each item. And so I have 30 bags going at all times.
Oh my gosh, Bethany. Like, oh my gosh.
Who needs coats? This is, Meredith, is this us trying to stay married? Is you go work on the donations, Bethany, and I'll take care of this leaky faucet. I don't know. I have too much research going on about who needs what the most. And so 30 donation bags going at all times. So I have a bag of shoes, lightly worn shoes. And then I have a bag of shoes that are too worn for reuse, but they could be recycled for parts, rubber materials. I have bags of school uniforms. I have bags of underwear, socks, things like that, that can't be, reused, but can also be recycled in a fabric place.
Yeah.
I want to stop this behavior. I want to grow out.
Yeah, that's pretty hardcore. That's pretty hardcore. Meredith. So Bethany is just being wonderful, letting us into her world and sort
yeah,
of her,
I'm
her,
so,
her
I'm
journey.
I'm impressed and astounded. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of, maybe it's easier as a single person to say what I want to keep, but I, in terms of my routine, but I hope that, this idea of being able to say no and to just have an evening at home, that's something I would like to keep, just like a better balance, that I also think that for people who are dating, this idea that everything moved slower, right? That you could have a video, a FaceTime date before a real date, and that you could take your time. I hope that that remains, because I think the most common problem I heard before this was dating fatigue from people. They were just sick of swiping and going, it all moved so quickly that they could never really rest in a moment. And I hope the world retains that, that feeling of, I don't have to do this as quickly as possible because it's not about quantity or missing out. But I would say this, and I actually fear saying it because I fear I might be taken up on it too much. For us people who are single, who don't have children, who, I think many of us have felt very frustrated that we haven't been able to help our friends who may be thoughtfully putting different clothing into bags to donate them, that we haven't been able to help, And I would just say that, like, this has reminded me that all of us, no matter how we're partnered or what children we have or don't, we're all supposed to exist in some sort of community. And I have told a few friends, look, when this is over, I'm supposed to help you babysit. And you're supposed to help me feel less alone. And I hope that we get to a place where we remember to call on each other and remember that it's not a burden. And if it is, we'll say so. But I want to embrace all that we can do after this for each other, because I will say that parents, no matter what resources you have, this is an entirely different experience for you than it is for other people. Everyone has had a difficult time in different ways, but it is just this very frustrating thing to think, if only I could do a little bit more. And I think soon we will. But just the sort of boundaries of, I don't have to be everywhere all at once. And my final soapbox perch that I will stand on is that I think that there's been a new respect for accessibility in the world. This idea that we can click on a link and see something, go to a party, go to a book reading, go to a concert without having to drive into the city and park, without having to navigate streets. For some people, that was always a barrier. And what's strange is that in the last year, there's been an accessibility that there hasn't been. So I've talked to a lot of venues about, how can we keep this going? Some people want to be there in person and some people just can't be. So I hope that sticks around too.
A lot of optimism there. I want to go back to the phones. No, Bethany, did you have something else you want to say there before I go back to the phones?
I absolutely agree with Meredith, and that is something that I would love to keep is, like you say, the idea of accessibility, being able to, you know, take, quote unquote, take the kids to the Louvre on a computer or watch a ballet, but also to stay in touch with family, you know, without this idea that we have to find, you know, we have to travel to each other, or, you know, we have to invite big groups of people for milestone birthdays. We celebrated a couple of milestone birthdays in this pandemic, and it was so beautiful to see people from all over the world celebrating. And, you know, we livened it up with little videos, and we did, you know, picture presentations and everything. So that was definitely those celebrations were highlights of the pandemic. I hope we don't let that go, so that we are able to stay together in ways other than traveling, or things that are cost prohibitive, like traveling.
Let's go back to the phones here. 800-423-8255 to join this conversation about what has changed in your pandemic life, your pandemic relationships, and how you feel about those changes. We've got Cindy on the line from Nashua up in New Hampshire. Cindy, welcome.
Hey. Hi, Tiziana. Can you hear
jump
me?
Jump on in. I can. Jump Hi. On in. Tell us your story.
Oh, well, I wanted to say that my relationship actually improved during the pandemic. I am a divorced woman with a grown child, and I had been seeing a man also divorced with children. And before the pandemic, we sort of struggled. You know, he had his space in his house, and I had mine, and we'd see each other when we could for almost 10 years. And I ended up living with my elderly parents, who were in their 80s. And then when the pandemic hit, I had to leave them because I couldn't safely be with them. And so I came and lived with him, and now we're engaged. So it turned out well for us being together, sort of forced to be together because I couldn't stay with my parents. And so things worked out well. We're planning a wedding in October.
Congratulations, Cindy. That's great. It is heartwarming to hear these moments like Cindy's in Nashua, right, where we've adapted to the pandemic and the necessities of it, even when they were unhappy necessities like having to move away from parents, and found joy in that. And the two of you, Meredith, Bethany, you've been joyful. I do also want to note that we've had some adaptations that have come out of pain, loss, you know, loss of income, loss of family members, adaptations based in trauma. How are we going to crawl our way out of those as we find our way out of the pandemic as well? As Meredith, maybe I'll start with you just in what you're hearing from readers and people who write to you.
Well, I mean, one of the things that we know is that we've all experienced this together. So I think there's going to be a collective understanding and empathy of everyone coming out of this with different losses. You know, just I always relate this back to dating and romance because of the advice column, but, you know, many people lost jobs and all of a sudden it meant a different thing. If you were on a dating site and said you were unemployed, like, well, you know, join the club, right? There was a better empathetic look at all of this, all of the places we can be in life. And when you stretch that out to encompass grief, I think, you know, it's so interesting. I think that people are much more likely to say nowadays, how are you? And really mean, you know, holistically, how are you? And I think, you know, again, not to be too optimistic, but I think we're just going to have to keep reminding ourselves that we don't know what the person next to us experienced over the past year. And I hope that kindness comes out of that and listening comes out of that. One of the positives of this has been that labor that had been invisible is now visible. But I think, you know, on Zoom calls, when children are in a room, you know, we see these things, you know, and losses has been very visible too. So I'm hoping that it turns us into a culture that makes space for that and truly pays attention to it.
Bethany, I've thought about that too. For you as a comedian, how do you accompany people in, you know, with your work, with humor? Often we turn to that when we're hurting. And what has that been like?
It's been really, people have been so open and so ready for any kind of laugh. Also, they've been way more open to and appreciative of you know, humor being more reality-based, you know, rather than just being silly, but being able to talk about things that are really tough to talk about and infusing it with humor. You know, during the protests after George Floyd's murder, it was hard for me and a lot of comedians to figure out how to be funny around those times. And I think finding that place where there is funny is one thing. And then the audiences on Zoom and Instagram Live and like all these strange ways we performed virtually, people being really open to it and embracing it and accepting it. Like, yeah, because everyone is going through this, like Meredith said, the whole world is going through this at the same time. Where I might joke about my anxiety or depression, some of the people in the audience might not have gone through that, or they might not, you know, have experience with it. Some people don't even believe that it's real. So you have this mix of people and their like level of reception to hear these jokes. But everyone has gone through this now. Everyone watched the protests. Whatever your feeling about it is, everybody's watched these things. And so now, as comedians, we're able to use this material to find funniness in maybe the way we thought about it, or the things that you know we would think would be the most pressing idea on our minds during these times, but it ends up being something else. Like, I have to have a toaster. If I have to be in lockdown, I've got to have a toaster, or something, you know, something like that. I think that that happens. I think that what audiences are, you know, more accepting of our topics, our material, what our material is thinking about and talking about, I think that's going to change a lot. And I watched it change over the year. And I hope that's something that stays, because I do think that we run from loss, we run from grief, we run from pain. And a lot of comedians, that's, you know, we're pulling from that. So.
And on that note, that is comedian Bethany Van Delft, who's also the host of the 10 News and Artisanal Comedy and co-host of Parental Logic on Nova PBS, as well as Meredith Goldstein, who runs the Boston Globe's Love Letters Advice column and podcast. Thank you so much. What a joy to have both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. This is awesome.